The Sloppy Sorting Hat is a podcast that includes adult language and content, as well as spoilers from your favorite TV shows, movies, and books. It is also a zero-budget production that may sometimes have weird audio quirks. You have been warned, and this is your last warning.
It's the Sloppy Sorting Hat.
Welcome to the Sloppy Sorting Hat. This is a podcast where we sort characters from our favorite movies, books, and TV shows, but because the hat and we are a little sloppy, we will most likely get it wrong. I'm Amanda.
I'm Danny.
And I'm Michelle.
Today, we have little segments everywhere.
Sometimes you need to scorch everything to the ground and start over. And while that sounds wild, we're not going to do that today. But we are going to sort the book slash TV show Little Fires Everywhere.
Woo! Okay, now it's time to get sloppy with some Patronus.
Ready, Fred?
Ready, George.
Bottoms up.
Patronus is the drinking segment where one of us drinks a margarita and then we discuss what we think the Patronus would be for one of the Harry Potter actors. I'm drinking a Jose Cuervo pink lemonade margarita, and it is delicious. And because it's pink, I'm going to go with our favorite pink lady, Imelda Mary Philomena Bernadette Staunton. Do you guys know who that is?
Who?
Is that Umbridge?
It is Umbridge, yes.
Why does she have such a long name?
I was like Rizzo? Like, I don't know.
So I think it's pretty obvious that her Patronus would be a cat, but yeah. More specifically a Persian cat. And here's why. The Persian cat has fluffy hair, and Imelda's hair has a pretty nice fluff to it. Also, Persian cats can look both fierce and gentle, and Imelda is able to change between the two pretty quickly, too. And last, Persian cats are known for their royal roots, and Imelda has several British royal honors. So I think that's a pretty good fit. What do you guys think?
I think she's a hairless cat because she wears pink and, like, cat skin's kind of pinkish.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
It's like not even close to the amount of effort I put into it, but fine.
Are we just talking domestic cats here?
I think whatever. We could talk about alien cats as well.
Well, I was thinking of a tiger or, the big cats, the big ones.
Yeah, they're cats.
I think actually I'm going to go with a man-coon. Because
a raccoon?
A man-coon.
What is a man-coon?
Oh, maybe it is a man-coon? Maine Coon. Whatever. Anyways, they are big and they seem like they have a big personality. And I feel like she just has a big personality. So, Maine Coon.
So, we all agree her Patronus would be a cat.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
For sure. 1,000,000%. Makes me sad that she loves cats so much in Harry Potter because just gives all of us cat people a bad name.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like, I really hate that because I do like love her office. I would want a bunch of like cats too in my office, but then I'd be afraid that I'd be called Umbridge, and I don't want to be called Umbridge. So
you would take Umbridge with being called Umbridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to do a shout out to her because the actress, because I think it says something that we like all really, really hate her. I think she's just incredible as an actress. So just want to do a shout out to whatever her name is because I didn't remember it. So
Imelda Mary Imelda. Philomena Bernadette Staunton.
Nice. What a great name. Great name for a great lady.
All right, Mish, what are you drinking?
I am drinking just, a BrewDog Elvis juice. One of my go-to favorites. Juicy, hazy IPA. It's delicious, as always. Amanda, what are you drinking?
I am drinking a nice big glass of red wine that I got from the box of red wine that I have sitting on my dining room table. It is a Pinot Noir.
Is it always sitting on your dining room table?
Yeah, that's where boxed wine goes.
Oh, okay. I know that.
It does not go on my fancy wine rack. It just goes on the dining room table. And it's mediocre, but I can't expect anything more from box wine. While we get sloppy, let's play Oh Bloody Beep.
Oh, bloody hell.
All she wants to do is me. My lips are getting chapped. Ugh.
So this is our segment where I recite one of the lines from the Harry Potter books, and I beep a word out, and then My sisters have to guess what word it is, who said it, what book, chapter, page number, all that. So the first one is, well, Arthur, you must do what you think is right, but you're forgetting Albus Dumbledore. I don't think anything could Harry at Hogwarts while Dumbledore's headmaster. We will go with Danny first.
Hurt.
Yep.
Sweet.
I'm in the lead. Okay. And you can guess who said it, what book, what chapter, what page. You know the drill.
Is it Goblet of Fire?
Nope. Incorrect. Meesh for the Steel.
Prisoner of Azkaban.
Yes. Good job, Meesh.
Thank you.
Do you want to guess who said it or the chapter or the page number?
Yeah. Snape?
Incorrect. All right. So that was Molly Weasley, Prisoner of Azkaban, chapter 4, page 66.
Dang, I knew it was page 66. I should have went with my gut.
That doesn't sound like Molly. Molly,
no, it was her.
I believe you, but I just think she always was like on the side of overly cautious.
Yeah, I agree. Well, it was in the beginning, so.
I got tricked. All right,
on to the next one. You'd be stiff if you'd be being on a brick wall all day.
I think Misha gets to go first.
Yeah.
Leaning?
Nope.
Okay.
Danny.
Sitting?
Yep. Good job, Danny. You're good at the word part. Okay. Who said it? Book, chapter, page, la-di-da-di-da.
Professor McGonagall?
Yep.
Sorcerer's Stone?
Mm-hmm.
Chapter 1?
Yep. Good job, Danny.
Page 8?
Oh my god, no.
Damn it.
Oh, damn. I was way off on this. I thought this was Mundungus Fletcher in like book fucking 7. So.
No, I actually tried to make these ones easier because we usually get really hard ones. So it's like, I'll make these easy.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Do you want to try to guess the page number, Meesh? Is that what we do?
Yep. Yep. Okay.
We can do whatever we want. It doesn't matter.
Page 3.
No. It was page 10.
Ugh. Oh, I thought 10. I was thinking 10. Damn it.
You're very close, Danny. Okay. So we have Danny has 5, Michelle has 1.
Oh my god, this is the best.
Okay, ready?
Damn, I'm fucked here.
Okay, we did it. We bashed them. We Potters, the one, and Voldy's gone. So now let's have fun. Danny, I think you go. Well, actually, we're just going to give this one to Michelle.
Are you going to give this one to me?
Well, I'm going to let you go first, yeah.
Okay, well, this would be Peeves.
Peeves,
I have to say the word. I'm sorry. I forgot. Can you repeat it?
Yep. We did it. We bashed them. We Potters, the one, and Voldy's gone. Now let's have fun.
Okay, Moldy.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's Peeves.
Yep.
And it's Deathly Hallows.
Yep.
I wish I remembered how many chapters were in Deathly Hallows. I know it's near the end. I don't know, like chapters 60.
No.
Okay.
Danny, chapter, page number.
What's the score?
You have 5, Michelle has 4.
Sweet. Okay.
So you don't have to try.
Either way.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go with, what chapter did she say? 60? Are there 60 chapters? I'm going to go with chapter 47.
Incorrect. It was chapter 36, page 746.
Okay. Nice.
So we got Danny the winner, Michelle the runner-up, but that means you lost. So
yes.
All right, you guys broke my streak. That's fine. That's fine. I'm gracious and
excited
in this loss. You bitches.
Language.
Okay, it's time to scorch everything. I mean, sort everything. Let's go.
When I call your name, you will come forth. I shall place a sorting hat on your head, and you will be sorted into your houses.
Okay, I'm going to start with Linda. I think Linda is probably a Ravenclaw. She went to a high university, and smart people go to OU because OU is the best. Okay, there's some more reasons.
Maybe. Done. No, that's it. That's all we needed.
Agreed. Well, let me just give you some other ideas for Ravenclaw. She tried showing off her creativity and renaming Mei-Ling to Mirabelle. It's a unique name, but why didn't she just keep it Mei-Ling? She mostly did a poor job when testifying during the court case, but I thought her answer to learning Chinese culture with Mei-Ling as she grows and they could both become more educated on and bond together was pretty clever. But when she talks about the blonde hair, blue-eyed baby doll basically being the ideal doll, that was pretty cringeworthy. She also has some very close-minded and somewhat callous moments, especially when spreading a rumor that she assumed BB had a recent abortion. And you know what happens when you assume. Elena makes an ass out of herself and everyone else she comes in contact with.
True.
So yeah, Ravenclaw, mainly because she went to OU.
Yeah.
I agree with this. The point on the name change is, did she know?
I don't think she did.
I don't think. No. Did they know?
Yeah, there was a note in the... with.
Oh. Mailing. See, well, it's been a while since I read the book.
No, that's fucked up. That's just fucked up.
Yeah, Linda is quoted saying that she changed the name because it was a new start to a new life. And
I remember that now.
But, like, Mei-Ling is a great name.
Yeah.
She could have at least called her Mei.
Yeah.
I love that name.
That's too bad. I agree. She's pretty cringe. Like, I understand she wants a baby. And, you know, and from her perspective, it's like this baby got left, got left by its mother. I don't know. She's not really thinking about the struggle for people who aren't in her situation.
Right. I mean, she's desperate. She is so desperate to be a mom.
Yeah.
That doesn't excuse some of her behavior, though.
Yeah, you kind of feel bad for her. But then at the same time, especially when she was talking about that perfect baby doll, it was just like, okay, I don't know how much more I can feel bad for you. But... it's sad, and the whole situation was kind of messed up, but I agree with Ravenclaw because of the OU thing, though. I mean, OU, yeah, for sure.
Obviously,
she's very smart. She went to a great school, so.
Yeah. Super smart.
I just want to say I knew I was going to like hearing Dani's sortings because she just read the book, and I think it's been a year for me since I read it.
Yeah,
it's been a long time
for me, too. Yeah, I just finished it 2 days ago.
Woo! Nice. I remember it being really good, though. Okay, so I'm up next, and I'm sorting Izzy, who is the youngest Richardson child. She's the most rebellious and for sure most passionate about her beliefs. She's actually so passionate that she burns down a house. So, yeah, I'm going to put Izzy into Hufflepuff.
Hell yeah.
Okay, I think she is... overly empathetic, and she's super caring, even though she has a very aggressive way to show it. Like, yeah, she may have pranked a teacher to pee her pants, but it was because the teacher was calling out a child during orchestra practice, so justified, obviously. She becomes very close to Mia during the duration of the novel. She shows a lot of loyalty, especially at the end when Elena eventually kicks Mia and Pearl out of the apartment. Mia states that everything must be burnt to the ground to make way for the growth of new ideas, but Izzy takes this advice a bit too literally and pours gasoline all over the house and sets the house on fire. I mean, I would say this is really deep loyalty for Mia to the point of burning down a house. So she also runs away and tries to find Mia. So I'm going with the loyalty aspect of this one, and she's going into Hufflepuff for me.
Spoiler alert, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Well, you learn about the house burning down in chapter one. You don't know who does it, but I think it's pretty, like, self-explanatory throughout the novel.
I was just joking. Yeah, we do the spoiler alert at the beginning. Yeah. I kind of like this when they do, like, the prank afterwards when Mia's like, what are you going to do about it? And then Izzy's like, what can I do about it? And then she decides, hey, I'm just going to put a bunch of toothpicks in door locks.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, she, you know, she wants to do something very passionate about how her beliefs and wanting to do something, but she's just a little too aggressive. I mean, it's kind of crazy. She's a bit of a lunatic, but I love it.
Yeah, but putting a bazillion toothpicks in door locks, that's hard work. That's only a thing a Hufflepuff could do.
Oh, yeah, true. Good point, Dani.
She does a lot of hard work. She helps Mia out, you know?
Oh, true.
She's the hardest working out of any of these siblings because the rest of them don't do jack shit.
True.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I agree with Hufflepuff.
Oh, good. Glad we're in agreeance, guys. I actually really liked Izzy as a character. She kept it interesting, for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I could relate to the rebellious teenage thing, obviously.
Yeah, you burned down a house, too.
I did not, but I thought about it. I'm up next, and I am sorting Moody. Yeah, he's boring. Right? fucking lame, boring, snooze fest of a character. At one point, he decides to invite Pearl over to meet his family because he verbatim thinks to himself that he has nothing else to offer her. So even he knows he's a boring fuck. Like, instead of any kind of sense of humor or personality or just, like, interesting knowledge or whatever that he could share with Pearl, this dude's like, yeah, I'm related to people and I live in a house. Please love me. And so therefore, he's a squib.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, he was kind of boring.
Plus, he turns into a total jackass towards the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, Moody is like one of those nice guy TMs who thinks, like, I'm nice, so you should date me automatically because I'm being nice, unlike other guys. And it's like, I'm going to date who I want to date. I don't care how nice you think you are. Like, he falls into that trap a little bit, I think.
Yeah, and it's like he thinks that he's special because he's nice. And it's like, no, that you're that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to be nice.
Right.
So, yeah, and then he's not nice.
And then he's not nice. And he's still boring even when he's not nice.
Yeah.
It's like he changed it up a little bit, became a dickhead, and he's still so fucking lame. And like, I literally don't care about him at all.
But he does ride a bike.
Yeah,
good point. He does ride a bike. Good point. Yep.
Yeah, there are bikes, guys. A lot of them. They like to ride them.
So anyway, yeah, you guys agree with Squib?
Sure. Yeah, that works.
Yeah.
Sure.
He's very boring. She could have done more with his character, but that's okay.
I liked that he was good friends with Pearl, but yeah, there wasn't much else to his character other than being a good friend until he wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it was intentional. I'm just saying, like, as a person, he's boring. I don't think that the author necessarily, like, failed with him or anything.
Oh, yeah. I'm up next with Trip, and I don't know about this guy. Like, has he ever heard of the bro code? Did the bro code exist in the 90s? Either way, I don't care that he and Pearl got together because, you know, they're two consenting teenagers. What I care about is the fact that he did it behind Moody's back. Now, we all just discussed how Moody is kind of lame, but I'm going to put Trip into Gryffindor because he's basically the definition of risky and frisky. Is it chivalrous that Trip saved Pearl from Moody's infatuation? Maybe. Was going behind his brother's back reckless? Definitely. Did his mom admit that he's a shallow, dumb jock? Yes. I think all signs point to Gryffindor.
Aw, that's really nice of you.
Well, Gryffindors are frisky.
I am not
frisky. I think Gryffindors like that.
Yeah.
Trip wasn't even all that bad, really. I found him a much more interesting character than Moody, at least, because he's like a dumb jock, for sure. That's the impression that we get right away from him. But he sort of kind of starts to realize, like, oh, Pearl has an awesome personality and is really cool. And I guess I don't have to just go for girls that are super hot. I can like other things about girls. Like, you know what I mean? He has sort of like a revelation about having relationships.
Yeah, but yeah. I think it's weird that he like uses his friend's basement to like have sex.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
It is shady. It's
kind of weird.
But with a mom like Elena, where are you going to have sex?
That's true.
Great question.
Well, whatever, we'll get to that when we get to Elena. I just think that he's kind of oblivious, like, to feelings and emotions. Well, maybe he just doesn't care. I don't know. Either way, definitely a typical jock. And I guess we can keep him in Gryffindor. Fine. But
I'm fine. All right. Amanda reluctantly agrees.
Well, I'm in Hufflepuff now, so.
Well, you're a Gryffindor.
No, you're Gryffindor.
Whatever. All right, we'll move on to Lexi. All right, Lexi, the eldest Richardson child. I think that she should be in Gryffindor. So book Lexi has Pearl write her college essay. TV Lexi steals a story Pearl said about her not getting into a math class due to prejudgment and discrimination. Either way, reckless and not so cool. Furthermore, book Lexi uses Pearl's name at the abortion clinic with Pearl's approval. TV Lexi uses Pearl's name without Pearl's approval. Either way, pretty schemey.
For sure. Yeah.
The TV's version is obviously way worse than the book in that aspect. I also believe that throughout the novel, she is very determined to have the perfect life. She wants to go to Yale and settle back down in her hometown of Shaker Heights with her high school sweetheart. But as we know, nothing ever goes as planned. So we know that Lexi has baby fever. However, she is reckless and ends up getting pregnant with her boyfriend, Brian. So on a more controversial, important note, she realizes it would be best for her to get an abortion. Now, I feel like this is a very sensitive topic, so I'm just going to say that about the circumstance she was in, getting an abortion, I believe, and I know everyone has the right to their own opinion, takes a lot of bravery for several reasons, not only for going through the process, which I'm sure is very rough for her and for anyone who has gone through it, but also for dealing with the backlash that comes with getting an abortion. So on that note, I'm going to end it right here and say those are the reasons I'm putting her in Gryffindor.
I would say anybody listening to this podcast who does not believe in pro-choice can go ahead and stop listening.
Okay,
I'm not sure how you made it this far into the series.
Okay, well, I was actually going to like say that, be like very open about it, how I'm like, I think every woman should have a choice and I believe in pro-choice and blah, blah, blah. But I didn't know if that's what we were getting into, so...
Yeah, I mean, I agree that it's brave and it's a difficult situation. That's the great thing about this book, is a lot of people make choices in difficult situations and some people would agree with them and some people would not agree with them. And it's every character pretty much has something that they do that you're like, I don't know about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
for so sure.
Lexi is, you know, has to go through that situation. It's difficult, makes bad choices while she's in that situation. And getting abortion is not the wrong choice. Using Pearl's name.
Yes.
Is the wrong choice. Same thing with Linda. Yes. Linda's in a difficult situation and she makes bad choices. It's easy to judge, but it's also the reason the book is great is that you see, you know, the struggle behind some of those bad choices.
Using her name is the worst.
For sure.
And I agree with everything that you said, Mish. In the book, she also didn't actually get her permission. She used it to make the appointment. And then once they were both at the clinic, Pearl was like, okay, sure, I'll just fill out the rest of the form for you. But she had already used her name.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
I just don't understand why Lexi did that.
I mean, I feel like she has a lot of nerve. So
like, Lexi would just come up with some random name.
Yeah, that's the thing that's like really stupid, because I understand why she used a fake name. She used a fake name because her mom's friend works there, right?
Yeah, right.
But why are you putting Pearl's name down? Put down any fucking name.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, obviously they needed to make some storyline development, so that's probably the only reason.
Oh, damn, man. Plot hole.
But then Lexi, when Izzy confronts her, Lexi's all like, whatever, it's fine. She didn't care. She did not care at all that her mom found out that Pearl supposedly had an abortion. She was just like, whatever, I'm done with this part of the situation. And she didn't care about the fallback.
Yeah. I mean, Lexi's not great.
Yeah, Lexi's not really that great. I mean.
But hey, she's going to Yale, so.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, it's a Ravenclaw, right?
All right,
I'm gonna Slytherin.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
Oh, ooh. Listen to that crack.
I know, right?
Say crack. Okay, again.
Crack. I am going to Slytherin with the Columbus Brewing Insane Wanderer, because there are quite a few wanderers in this book.
Yeah, like, sure.
Izzy and Mia, they just kind of wander.
Yep.
All over the country.
Love it.
It's good. Tastes like beer.
The best kind of beer. All right. Well, I'm up next and I'm sorting Pearl. I'm going to sort Pearl into Ravenclaw, but not for the reason you think. Okay. That's what makes it sloppy. it's not because she's all book smart, like borderline genius or whatever. That, you know, that kind of girl. I'm putting her in Ravenclaw because she has the intelligence to know that when you're in high school and you're young, you got to get some of that good ass while you can.
That's exactly why I thought you were putting her into Ravenclaw, actually.
You know, like, she recognizes that Moody is boring and has no interest in him sexually or romantically. So, A plus. Good job, Pearl. Second, she realizes you can save the nice guys for a little later when you're ready to get serious and settle down. And when you're, you know, this young and hot, you just got to get some of that older hottie tushy while you can, right? Right. So, good, like, cheers to you, Pearl.
Agreed.
Plus all that smarty smart stuff.
Yeah, whatever. It's about booty.
It's all about that booty.
She did it all for the booty.
She did. And I also think that she
did.
Well, she was kind of obsessed with it. And then she's like, can anybody tell? Can my mom tell? Can anybody see it on my face that I had sex?
Yeah, which was super adorable. Right.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's gonna know. Like, nope. I don't think that you're gonna rubber stamp on your forehead like you know, like a virgin with like an X on it. Do you guys agree? Or?
Yeah. No. I agree. Yeah. sorry. I also think that it was very smart of her to just hang out at the Richardson's house. Right. I mean, they have like big comfy couches and TV and snacks.
Snacks. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. All those snacks. Yeah.
I mean, I do feel
Jerry
bad
Springer.
For me, yeah.
Just always watching Jerry Springer.
Watching Jerry really Springer. Smart They're a TV. Weird family. They're a weird family.
They really are.
Yeah. Definitely weird.
Not like us. We're not weird at all.
We're normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely normal.
But really, Pearl's like such a great daughter.
Yeah. I do feel bad that she just hangs out at the Richardson's house all the time and like Mia wants to spend time with her or just feels threatened. But other than that, I don't think she realizes that that's what she's doing. I think that she just wants to hang out there, which I didn't blame her. I mean, she's in high school, wants to be with her friends, wants to socialize, and they're
to have snacks.
Yeah, wants to watch Jerry Springer, wants to look at Trip all the time, you know.
Yeah, mostly the Trip thing. Just trying to scoot in next to him on the couch.
Yeah.
So cute.
So cute.
Like, totally cute.
I am up next, and I have BB Chow. BB is a Slytherin. The amount of ambition this lady has is remarkable. She was poor and in a nightmarish situation when Mailing was born, but she did everything she could to keep Mailing safe, including dropping her off at a fire station. Fire stations are resources, and she was resourceful. Nice. She was bold in her fight to get Mailing back. Standing up to the rich people of Shaker Heights is pretty terrifying. She was really charming. I think she got a lot of people in Shaker Heights on her side and the city of Cleveland. And she was a little bit schemey with that whole plan to take Mei Ling and fly back to China. Bibi was always determined to mother her child to the best of her ability, and she made it happen, even if it was a little schemey. So she's a Slytherin.
Yeah. Slytherin for her.
I agree. Yeah,
I really like that sorting.
The fact that she's able to nab her baby back is like a shocking thing that happens at the end of the book, but it's a true amazing scheme.
Yeah,
for sure. Like, how did she get on that flight?
I don't know.
Baby? Like, I guess why would they wonder if there? Well, I mean, she was in the news. She was kind of famous in Cleveland, but
babies don't need a ticket, right? And
true.
This is the 90s. Yeah. So the security is way laxer to get on the plane and to be, you know, maybe like a little bit, I don't know if this is going too far, but, you know, she's Asian. A lot of white people can't tell the difference between Asian people. Mm-hmm. Like when you're like, she's on the news, it's like, are they going to recognize her? Or is she just going to be some Asian lady at the airport?
That's true.
I'm not saying it's a good thing. that's but it's a true thing. So I feel like it would be easy for her to do that.
Yeah, I think it was pretty amazing that she was able to also afford that plane ticket.
Well, I kind of assumed like Mia gave her the money. Oh. From selling the photo.
Oh, that's an interesting thought.
Which I don't think they outright state, but I feel like that's the implication, because how else would she get on a plane?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, like in the show, Mia gave her money for like the lawyer, I think. In the book, it did not make it clear that Mia even knew she was about to do this. It was kind of like, maybe because I said these things, she decided that this was okay. But maybe you're right. Maybe she did give her some money.
I mean, Mia might not have known exactly what it was for, but I think she did give her money.
Or she might have just been saving up all her tips from working. She worked a lot.
It's not like it costs thousands of dollars to get on a plane to China, right? It's like a few hundred.
If it's just back probably then, one way. Maybe.
Yeah, exactly, right. Yeah.
Now it's probably a couple thousand.
Well, yeah.
But well, if it's just one way, too, it's probably a lot less.
It's also just one way, yeah.
That's true. I do love that in the book, it goes on to the like the future, in that Linda does end up adopting or is about to adopt a Chinese baby. I think that's nice that it kind of goes full circle for her. Not that that has anything to do with BBCI, I just remembered it. They don't do that in the show, so that's why I mentioned it.
I forgot about that.
Yeah,
that's really nice.
Is that for real, or are you trolling us?
I think I was just very
shocked. No, that really happened.
I think I was just very shocked that BB, like, did this whole scheme to go to China. And, like, didn't she, like, break in to her room? Mei-Lin's room specifically, or Maribel, whatever you want to say. It was
Mei-Ling.
She broke into Mei-Ling's room.
She just stood outside watching and waited until the lights all went out.
I was so shocked by that.
Especially because, like, I'm sure there's a baby monitor, right?
Oh, yeah, but, right. Like, it was the night after the trial had ended and everything, so they were just, like, deep sleep.
Exhausted.
At least that's what the author wrote.
No, and I believe that, but also, it's still difficult to
They actually talked about that. Like, Linda had talked about how she realized that Mei-Ling was happy and BB's arms, so that's why she didn't make a peep, and she's like, she was really her mother or something kind of like that.
Yeah, I remember that. I mean, more just the woman like walking around in the room and them not hearing it on the baby monitor. Obviously, the baby not crying is definitely a plot point for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
She also could, the baby just could have been asleep and stayed asleep, because babies stay asleep.
Totally.
So, but you know, yeah, sure.
Not my baby, but other babies might.
Babies are well known for sleeping all the way through the night without waking, I think. So.
Yeah, super known for that.
Well, she's like a year, so she probably was, but yeah. Anyways,
okay.
That was a lot about BB.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, well, she's a pretty complex character, so. I'm up next, and I have Mia Warren, or Mia Wright, I think is her actual last name, correct?
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to put Mia into Ravenclaw. For one, she's an artist, which I think it takes some cleverness to be an artist. I also think it was very wise of her to tell BB that she thought it was her baby that Mark and Linda were going through the process to adopt. I feel like BB had the right to know. Don't know what you guys feel about that, but we can discuss that afterwards. And then when she was younger, in order to be able to pay for school, she does agree to do a surrogate baby for a couple who could not conceive. Fiscally smart, but obviously not emotionally smart, because she ends up saying that she lost the baby and runs away with the baby. While her and Pearl were on the road, she always thought of ways to get by, which I think takes some cleverness, even taking on a job from the Richardsons that would essentially pay their rent. She refurbishes an old bike for Pearl, which I thought was super cool and fun that she did that. And then at the end, when she left portraits of the Richardsons as a way to symbolize what she thought of them, which I thought was a very unique thing to do. Therefore, that's why I'm putting her into Ravenclaw.
Yeah, she's definitely a Ravenclaw. I mean, she's artsy fartsy, and we've decided that Ravenclaw is like art, right?
Yeah, that's a thing.
They're artsy fartsy.
Creativity.
Yeah, that's the word, creativity, not artsy fartsy.
I agree with all of that. I think that it took everything that she does takes a lot of creativity to live the life she wants to live. Takes a lot of creativity to make it work. Yeah, I always just kind of like marvel at the idea that some guy saw her on the subway and was like, "You look just like my wife." Like, really? Like,
yeah.
It's such a weird way to get into that, into like becoming a surrogate. Someone being like, "You look just like my wife. We're desperate for a child. Will you carry it?" Very strange. She has a very strange life.
Yeah, that part freaked me out during the show because I hadn't read the book first. So yeah, I did it backwards. And it just like was really creepy.
I mean, it's just
creepy in general anyway. Sorry.
I didn't finish watching the TV series, but in the book, I found it like just very inquisitive. I was like, what is this? Like, obviously he doesn't want to hurt her because in the book they didn't make it very aggressive. I don't know what they did in the TV series. But I just feel like they didn't make it very aggressive. So I was like, what storyline does this have to do with? And then it kind of all made sense as soon as they went about it. But I didn't think it was very crazy in the book. I mean, obviously a little creepy.
Well, she was like running away-ish, trying to get off her subway. She was going to be late for work. So she was freaked out. But yeah, it wasn't nearly as creepy as watching it play out on the show.
Right. And I think the fact that what got me to not think it was like super aggressive was that he didn't seem aggressive. He was just kind of like watching her and
following her.
Yeah, it came off super creepy, Amanda. I'm a little concerned that you don't find it creepy.
She had her keys in between her fingers, you know how we do as women.
Yeah, but it didn't end up bad.
I must have been reading it at night.
But before you know what he really wants, it seems really creepy.
And even when you do know what he wants, it's still pretty creepy.
It's still pretty creepy, yeah. The fact that she even heard this guy out, let alone actually conceived the child, is crazy.
Well, I mean, you can go back to a Linda argument and say that he was very desperate.
He definitely was. It's the same. You're absolutely right, man. It's the same thing. Somebody's in a desperate situation and makes a questionable choice, right?
I will say that I guess like leading up to the events was like very weird, very creepy. But then once you found out the reason why, I kind of like, okay, that makes sense now. Now that looking back at it, knowing what he was doing, it doesn't seem as like weird anymore.
Yeah, I feel like he should have just been like, hey, I want you to have my baby. No.
Yeah, that would have been much better.
Yeah, that'd have been way less weird.
But anyway, I do agree that she is artsy fartsy for sure. And like, it's really it takes a unique personality to be like to get into the situation that she did with the Richardsons, where it turns sour. You know, things do not end well, but she still leaves them unique personalized parting gifts of her art, right? So it's like, what a strange person.
I know, she is so weird. Like, it just is so hard to wrap your head around this character for sure.
Yeah, I kind of love that she just like moves on when she's ready, but it's also something that I definitely would never do.
I like that she does that too for herself and not for Pearl. Obviously Pearl doesn't really appreciate it, so
yeah. But Pearl is still seen, there were times where she was like, well, at least I get to start over, but this time she was very upset about
right.
I mean, Pearl will appreciate it later in life, I think.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a problem later in life. At the time, it's a big deal for her.
Yeah.
And also, I know that you said we could talk about later. I think telling BB was good idea.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. Thanks, Danny, for bringing that. I almost forgot about it.
Oh, yeah. BB has a right to know. I agree with that for sure.
Especially since BB was talking about the baby. It's not like he was like, hey, I heard about this Chinese baby. Is it yours? No, she knew that BB was looking for her baby.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So definitely, I think that stirring that up, as Elena would say, was a good idea on her part.
I just feel like that's the right thing to do, you know?
Oh,
like,
for sure.
Morally is the right thing to do.
Yeah, more Hufflepuff, really.
Yeah, that's true. I had a hard time.
Because there were a lot of consequences, obviously, for her and for BB and for basically every single person in this book. But I think that it was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
So I'm up next and I have Elena. And this woman, she needs to relax. Like, And then what I want to do for her is I want to sort her into Hufflepuff just for her own good. You know, I want her to be able to eat some cookies, right? Instead of weighing every little tiny bit of food that she puts into her mouth.
Mm-hmm.
I want her to get sloshed on some butter beers, you know, instead of drinking that sad half glass of wine once a week or whatever she allows herself. I want to let her become friends and see the value of friendship with other people and like connect with another human being on some kind of real emotional level instead of the strange, awkward bullshit that she presents out to even her own husband and closest friends and children, let alone anybody else, literally every second of the day. So, I mean, props to Reese. She's amazing as always. Plays the character so great, but someone needs to chill the fuck out because she's awful. And as much as I want to put her in Hufflepuff for her own good, just to help her out, I wish I could. I don't think I can do that because I feel like her schemes place her pretty solidly into Slytherin, right?
Totally.
She's out there just like spinning little webs of deceit throughout this entire fucking community. And yeah, so I mean, like, Elena, my advice to you, try some honesty in your even one aspect of your life. And damn, girl, pull yourself together. And if you can't do that, you're in Slytherin.
Yeah, the schemes, there's so many. I just this lady, am I right?
Right. You are right. You are correct.
I mean, I love that she's like a reporter, but she like doesn't even care about the thing she's reporting on anymore. So she just like goes to Pittsburgh to find Mia's family and just so like, much like
fuck off, Elena. Get your nose out of other people's butts. Like,
I
seriously.
I think she just really goes down the rabbit hole and has no self-control. And
she has plenty of self-control for other stuff though, so it's not really an excuse, right?
It's definitely not an excuse. But when it comes to this, I think when it comes to being there for Linda, she's struggling with knowing where the line is, and she definitely crossed it for sure.
I think her problem is that she's bored with her life and she should have done something more exciting, and it's her own fault.
Oh, I could see that for sure.
You know, because it's like she could have gone and worked at the Times. She could have been like, I think, a foreign reporter, right? A foreign affairs reporter, traveled the world with that man she clearly was like on fire for. Like, instead, she's like, you know, I'm just going to move back to Shaker and pop out too many kids and work for the goddamn Shaker Heights Gazette or whatever the fuck it's called. Like, she's not even working for the Plain Dealer. So, I mean, like, and these choices are all fine for somebody who actually wants that life and isn't just telling themselves they want that life.
Right. Yeah. And she's obviously a good reporter. Like, in the book, when she does go talk to the Wrights, she so easily can get information out of them without hardly even trying, really. So she would have been great, you know, with, like, the Times or something.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that.
Very manipulative to get information, which is a good Slytherin trait. So,
true.
I mean, she will do whatever it takes. And unfortunately, this information is just none of your freaking business, Elena. Like, leave it alone.
Right.
And I just think she just went really deep into the rabbit hole and enjoyed it. I think she actually enjoyed it. Most people don't like going down the rabbit hole, and she actually fully enjoyed it. So.
Oh, she definitely enjoyed it, to the point that the author had to have her house burned down for us to feel like Elena got what she deserved, because she kind of won until that point, right? Like, and then BB taking her Linda's baby anyway. It's like, it seems like Elena got everything she wanted, and then it all went up in flames, literally.
Yeah. Oh, Elena.
Yeah, she is quite the character. At first, when I was reading the book, and they're like, oh, she's very ritualed, she weighs herself every morning, and she's always like 125 pounds exactly, and only has a half a glass of wine at dinner, and I was like, okay, I can get behind that. She really, you know, enjoys having a routine. And then it was like, oh, never mind, she's crazy.
This woman's almost everything I hate, basically, so there's no way I was ever gonna love her.
Reese Witherspoon does a very great job, though.
Of course. Shout out to Reese, one of our longtime listeners.
Yeah. I want to be a part of your book club.
A while ago.
Yeah.
I will say that I had a hard time because I just read, or I read Little Fires Everywhere. And then about, like, I think maybe 3 or 4 months later, I started reading Big Little Lies. And it was strange for me because Reese Witherspoon plays the main character in both of the books, or the TV series. And it was just very strange or hard for me to differentiate between the two. I was like, wait, am I thinking Big Little Lies or am I thinking Little Fires Everywhere? But she does great in both. Just want to throw it out. Oh, yeah. There.
She is amazing in both.
I mean, it's slightly the same type of character, so she plays it very well. I think she's just, like, typecasted for that, honestly.
Well, I think both of these books became TV shows because Reese read them and was like, we got to make this into a show.
She has a production company. She has a production company, and I'm pretty sure that's how she gets to be the lead.
Yeah, so if she's being typecast, she's typecasting herself.
Right.
Obviously, she's not always typecast, though, because she's the best Elwood ever.
So. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Of course.
I mean, ever since she has had her book club, I feel like she's just been typecasted into those roles. But love her. Love the books that she reads. Obviously, I read them, too, and love her in the TV series. So just keep doing your thing, Reese Witherspoon.
Everything Reese reads turns into a TV show.
Love it.
All right, well, now we're going to bring a little bit of magic into the world of Shaker Heights because it's time for the Magical Mashup.
Magical Mashup.
This is a segment where we mash up the two universes. You guys get it. Whatever, I don't have to explain it. So for the Magical Mashup...
I don't get today, it. Reese gets it. She's a longtime listener. Explain it to me, Meesh.
You have the book we sorting. We had Harry Potter, which is what we always talk about.
Oh, and I get it.
You put them together.
Oh, like you mash it. You mash them together, like physically.
Mash them together, yeah.
And it becomes its own world.
Yeah, exactly. So for this this episode's Magical Mashup, I want to talk about adaptations. Because both of these are books that are adapted into visual medium. And specifically, I want to talk about how the book is always better. So what I came up with was one of the most egregious examples of poor adaptation for each of the Harry Potter and Little Fires Everywhere. And also, we'll take your guys' opinions as well. So for Little Fires Everywhere, I think the most egregious change that they made from the book to the show is that they had the fire get started not by Izzy, but by the other siblings, and it doesn't make any fucking sense.
Wait, I didn't know that. Why would they change that?
What are you talking about?
The fire at the end of the show.
It wasn't by Izzy? I thought it was.
There's no way they changed that.
Izzy start the fire? Let's check and Google. I don't believe Meesh.
Oh my God, who's typing faster? I don't know. Okay, well, while you guys go look that up, I'm going to get more wine. I'll be right back.
Yeah, here we go. Izzy is pouring gasoline around the house, but her siblings stop her, and then Alina shouts at her and tells her she never wanted her, and then the siblings decide to finish the job and set their rooms on fire.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, why would they do that?
I don't know, man. Like, it... From a narrative perspective, it's way less satisfying.
Amanda's getting her wine.
Oh, I forgot Amanda's getting wine, yeah.
Okay, I'm back, sorry. So what did we find out?
We confirmed that I was correct.
Oh.
Started a fire, but only in the book.
That's so dumb.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying is, like, narratively, it's like they wanted to redeem the other siblings. Like, they were on Izzy's side in the end, but it makes way more sense for Izzy to start the fire and then run away. And so I think it's a poor change. In Harry Potter, I think the most egregious change from the books to the movies is that stupid fucking scene where Bellatrix...
Goblet of Fire? Oh, damn it.
Yeah, I was thinking Goblet of Fire, too.
Did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire?
Did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire, Harry?
No.
Dumbledore says calmly.
Dumbledore said calmly, yeah. That is also bad, but I was going to say the stupid scene they add to, like, I think it's the sixth movie, where, like, Bellatrix and a bunch of Death Eaters just show up at the Burrow and, like, attack them. Mm, and I'm like, hey, guys, if they could do that, they would have done it by now.
Yeah, no, that's so true.
They can't just show up at the Burrow and start attacking because there's fucking wards and shit. Like, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah. That is so dumb.
I remember it's like one of the early scenes in that movie. And so I go to the movie and I'm watching it. And I was sitting next to Jim and I kept turning to him going like, this is bullshit. This doesn't make any fucking sense. And Jim's like, Jim is like, shh. I'm trying to watch. And I'm like, what are you watching? You're watching bullshit.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense, but it is an interesting scene to watch.
Yeah, I can see maybe they felt like they needed a little more action or something, especially because the sixth book is pretty light on action until the very end. But like, it's just stupid. It makes no sense. I just hated it.
And I understand the concept that like they needed more action because the sixth book is like only action wise at the end. However, the sixth book is really good without the action, but that's not good for Hollywood. So that's probably why they did that. Which it's stupid. They could have done something else that made more sense because that really doesn't, like, did you not think about this before you put it in?
Right.
They could have also just not taken out some of the other stuff they took out and put that in instead.
True. Yeah, that'd be good, yeah.
Because that's a long-ass book, and I know they missed a lot.
I really like the sixth book. It's one of my favorites, for sure. You just find out so much information about Voldemort in the sixth book, which is great.
That's true. Which is maybe not the most exciting thing to show in a movie, but I enjoyed it as a reader.
But I don't understand why they wouldn't think that us Harry Potter fans who have read the book wouldn't want to see that. You know, like, we want to see the book.
A lot of people watching the movies don't read the book.
So yeah, I know.
Marketing to those people.
I know. Anyway, it's unfortunate. Just read the books, guys.
Exactly. That's my whole point for this magical mashup. The book is always better.
Always.
And I've made my case, and I stand by it.
Cool. I like that magical mashup.
All right, up next, we're going to talk an eerie theory.
You're not going mad. You're just as sane as I am.
Which is when we talk about a Harry Potter theory and just discuss it and shit. So here we go. My theory for this episode is that the reason Harry is so affected by Dementors is not because he has really bad memories, or at least not just because of that. It's also because he has not just his soul inside him, but part of Voldemort's soul. He has extra soul.
God, I love this theory.
So Dementors are extra interested in sucking him up.
That's so interesting.
That's
a great theory, Mish.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Great point. Did you come up with this yourself?
Kinda. Definitely. I read something similar and I adjusted it slightly.
I like this.
Yeah, because that's what they're looking for. Dementors are looking for the soul. Kiss that soul out. And if he has a soul and a sliver of a soul, that's extra soul.
It's extra soul, super baby. Soul.
I mean, there's like more. So the point of the Dementor's kiss is that you see bad memories? Is that the whole point? I'm blanking.
No, well, the point of the Dementor's kiss is that they suck the soul out.
Oh, but, right.
When the Dementors are near, it makes people
feel sad.
So Remus was like, Remus, sorry, I mispronounced his name. Remus.
he tells
Harry that, of course, he has a bad reaction. He has such bad memories. But I'm like, actually, bro, he's 1 year old when that happens. And I don't think he actually has a lot of access to those memories. So I think it's because of the extra tasty soul bits that he has.
I mean, why does he pass out every single time there's a Dementor? It has to be because he's part Voldemort.
Yeah, like other people have bad memories. Does Neville pass out? No.
And Neville has really bad memories.
Yeah, he is that toad.
Yeah.
And he always loses him.
He's losing it. Yeah.
It's a sad thing for him. That's a great theory. I love that theory.
And like secondarily, I also think if they just tore down that school, none of this shit would have ever happened.
Oh, yeah. Friend of the podcast, Jose. Agrees with you, Mish.
That's another theory to drop on you guys. Not sure if you've heard that one before.
Well, I like it, Mish.
Well, thanks.
I thought it was fun. I agree. I think that it has to be some sort of Voldy, Harry soul mixing going on, for sure. Mm-hmm.
That sounds
sexual. I like this.
Well, that's okay.
It is sexual.
It gradually becomes ship, ship, hooray, and it's Voldemort Harry.
Voldry. How would we even mash that up? I don't even know.
Very.
Oh, yeah, there you go. It's better. Okay, so it's time to spill that Veritas serum.
The time has come for answers. Have you brought the Veritas serum?
So this is a segment where we ask our listeners to send us a question and we have to answer truthfully, right? Except for none of our listeners ever send us questions. So we have to make them up. So I just thought of questions myself, and this is all just Little Fires Everywhere based. So since we all read the book, how did you feel about the book? Just in general, I feel like we could have a discussion about it, right?
The fuck is this, a book club? What the
yeah.
fuck?
Yeah. Oh my God. This is the first book that we've had, okay? It should be turned into a book club.
It's not true. We did Hunger Games.
That was a movie, though, too. Oh, I guess this is a TV
show. This series. Is a TV show.
We did Harry Potter. That was a book.
Oh, that's a good point.
We did. Wait, I didn't know that was a book. Really?
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter.
How did I feel about this book? I read this book in one day.
Oh, my God.
So I was really into it. I was hooked. I love so much of it. I thought that it had some really good, like, themes, and there's showcasing, like I said, how difficult situations can force bad choices and how everyone deserves at least a little bit of sympathy, even Elena, I guess, although I give it to her begrudgingly. And I was really, really digging Mia's life story, even though I think she's so weird. Like, I don't think they go into it as much in the show or maybe even at all, but like the breakdown of how she got into photography and like the gradual yes. like mm-hmm. improvement of her art and everything, I found really fascinating. So a lot of good detail in the book as well. I just think it's an excellent book.
I really liked the book, but it was a little difficult to read it after watching the TV series. I pictured basically everything that happened in the show while I was reading, which was fine with me. It's just that some of it was just like exactly the same. So I was like, okay, how am I going to get through this? This is taking forever. But overall, the book was great. I also really enjoyed that it was based in Shaker Heights or in Cleveland. As most of our listeners probably already know, we all live in Ohio. So that was really fun to actually know some of the things that they were talking about.
Yeah, that's always cool.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. To just kind of piggyback on what Danny just said about the Shaker Heights thing, I loved in the beginning of the book how it was talking about how Shaker Heights is very planned, like as a city planning level, because I relate to that because that's my job. So I really like that, and love that it was so close to home. I agree with Michelle and the Mia story. The flashback when she goes to college and her paintings and being so close to that professor was just so intriguing for me. I read it very quickly too, not in a day. I think it took me probably about a week to read, which sounds pathetic compared to Michelle.
I mean, like, no, I'm just a creep.
It took me many weeks to read it, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, but you have a kid, so that makes sense. I have nothing else to do. I thought there was a lot going on. They just jump storylines a lot, which is fine, but I thought it was kind of hard to follow, but I really liked it. I mean, I think I gave it like 4 stars on Goodreads out of 5, so I can't remember. But
we all gave it 4 stars, I checked.
Okay. Nice. I did really like it, though. I think it just set precedent for other books that I have read, and I kind of like compare it to this one, and I really liked it. I thought it was a good read.
I do want to note that Shaker Heights is a disaster to drive through. There's like an intersection with like 5 things, and there's not a roundabout to help it out. It's the worst. But Shaker is a very beautiful city.
My storage unit is in Shaker Heights, and it's such hell to get to. I will tell you that. I hate driving down that goddamn road.
Guys, I heard it's a perfect idyllic planned community. What are you talking about?
The architecture is phenomenal in Shaker Heights. I absolutely love it. And it's like an architecture's dream. And I understand. I think in the book and in the TV series, they were talking about the grass height and sending letters to homeowners that they need to mow their grass. Do you guys remember that part?
Oh, yeah.
I used to do that job. So I know how that feels. I'm on the other side of it though. Fun, I don't receive the letter, I give the letter. I don't do it anymore, but I just thought it was fun. Those like little tidbits. I was like, oh yeah, I used to do that job. I wonder how it's like doing it in Shaker Heights.
Yeah. The Ohio aspect was really cool, especially that one of them went to Ohio University. I really enjoyed that.
Love it.
Love it.
Oh, you?
Oh, yeah. Woo!
So I just wanted to join in on that.
All right. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed our Little Fires Everywhere episode. Don't forget to like us, rate us 5 stars, subscribe, share, comment, or whatever else you want to do to keep us going. Please follow us on Instagram at sloppy.sorting.hat, Twitter at sloppysorting, and on Facebook. Also, check out our TikTok at sloppysortinghat for some special sloppy stuff. Send us questions and suggestions. Until next time, stay sloppy. No, she lifted the turkey baster from the tray. It was warm.
Ew.
I know, right? So gross.
So weird.
Best thing I could find.